Hey Emma, how are you?
Everyone,
My name is Emma Katz. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining this evening. For all the faces that I recognize from all over, whether it be Chicago people or I see some high school friends, college friends, everyone's a fan of Professor Nechama Price. So thank you so much for joining this evening. This is incredibly special for me to have Professor Price here this evening. Professor Price was one of my favorite teachers in Stern. I pretty much majored in her. I took every class possible. She is a teacher, a mentor, and a real role model. Professor Nechama Price is a teacher of Bible and Judaic Studies at Stern College for Women. She is the director of the GPATS program, Graduate Program for Advanced Talmudic Studies. Great, got that one right. And she is a Yuatzet Halacha. She lives in Teaneck, Bergenfield. I forget what exactly it is. But we are so happy to have her join us in Chicago tonight, especially without taking a flight. One of the beauties of Zoom, we would have never been able to have Professor Price take us into Yontif in the same way. So welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you everyone for joining to learn this evening. When Professor Price is done, please go back to the website through which you access this year in order to choose the next session with Ms. Talia Malotsky or with myself. We look forward to continuing to learn with you. And with that, Professor Price.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Can we hear me? We're good? Okay. It is so exciting to be speaking to you all in Chicago. I was only there not that long ago to speak to you live, but how wonderful to speak to you from my dining room table. So this is really, really lovely. And it is a humongous honor for me to speak in the same program as two of my favorite people, two of my students from the past who are now my friends, Talia Malotsky and, of course, Emma Katz, who just spoke. I love them both, and I am so excited to learn from them tonight. And as I already told Talia, I think my daughters are more excited for their shiurim than for mine. But I'm really excited to be here tonight to learn with you. And I see a bunch of other students that are on. So hi, guys. I see you all. And it's so nice to learn with everyone here tonight. I see Talia's family, a lot of people that I know from there, and my family. So welcome, everyone. And thank you for inviting me to speak tonight. As we all know, Simchas Torah is around the corner. And one of the things that we do in Simchas Torah, which to me is a little bit sad and makes me sad, is that we read about the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. And I always get very emotional and I always get very sad because even though we're excited, we're entering into Eretz Yisrael, we finished our 40 years in the desert, you know, we're about to start the next chapter of our nation. The greatest leader dies and he doesn't get to take us in, and it's very sad. And we're left at this moment in time where we are mourning his death, but at the same time, a new leader has to take over. Someone has to take and fill the shoes of Moshe Rabbeinu, which, as my title suggests, and by the way, I hope you all have source sheets. I was asked not to share screen, so make sure the chat, I think it's there, and I think it was emailed out. Make sure you all download the source sheet. If you don't, let me know, but it would be a shame not to be following along with me. But we now have to start the story of our next leader. And one of the questions that we have, which is a great question to think about, which is, why is Yehoshua chosen to be the next leader? Now, I know you're going to say to me, as I gave you in source number one, why he was chosen is because God said so. I know that to be true. Source one in Bamidbar Chav Zayin, God says to Moshe, Kachas Yehoshua Benun, take Yehoshua, put your hands on him, give him from your ruach, he's going to be the next leader. Also in source one, I give you three different psukim where Moshe tells us Yehoshua is going to be the leader after us. It's not that we had a question who was going to be the next leader, but I want to know why. Why was it that Yehoshua was chosen? Does everyone see the source sheet in the chat? Everybody seeing it? If not, no, then I will re-chat it because I know Emma just did. Hold on. I want to make sure everyone has it, or I can share a screen if people would prefer. Everyone publicly. Okay. How many now does everyone see? You could just push that and my source sheet should pop up. Okay. If that doesn't work, someone just unmute yourself or make funny faces at me. Okay. But the question that I want to know is why? Why Yehoshua? And let me ask a number of questions. Why I really feel strongly that I need to ask such a question. Why Yehoshua? Did you not see what I just posted? Whoever just said I don't see it? Okay. Do you want me to share a screen? Do we just do that? Okay. Fabulous. It's good. I have it open. Here we go. Okay. Shared screen. Everybody with me? Okay. Beautiful. Give me 1 second. Okay, here we go. All right, so in front of you now, you see my source sheet, and hopefully that works now for everyone. I did source number one, I'm moving on to source number two. The reason why I question this assumption that we have of course Yoshua should be chosen is for a number of reasons. First of all, number one, I look back at Yoshua's track record. Obviously, he must have done something to deserve to be chosen. So I would have thought that the person who's going to be chosen would of course be the greatest person of the next generation, right? That's who should be chosen. But what's interesting is if I look at the story that I know of about Yoshua, probably his most famous story, which is the story of the spies. And he's, of course, one of the two good spies. But if I look at the list of the 12 spies that are chosen, he's number 5 on the list. And when you're looking through the list, it's a very weird order. It's not the order of the Mahod. It's not the order of age order of the Shvatim. It's a very strange order. If I look at the Ramban here in source number 2, he explains to me what the order is based on. And he says, Kol ma'alat atzman min am. The order of the Shvatim, of the Meraglim that are being sent is the order of how great they were, their value, who they were as a person. And therefore I start to question, wait a second, that makes Yoshua number 5. Kalev is before him on the list. So again, he's not seemingly, at least from the start, the greatest person of that generation. Not only that, source number 3. Within the story of the Meraglim, Moshe changes his name, as we all know, Vayikra Moshe lehu Yoshua. For those who never heard me before, I read what's bolded, so it's easy to follow me. Moshe changes his name from Hoshea to Yoshua. And as Rashi points out, based on the Gemara and Sota, he's praying for him. Yo Yoshiach, Ya Yoshiach, Me'asas Meraglim, Hashem should save you from the idea of the Meraglim or from what the Meraglim are going to be planning. Yoshua, seemingly alone on his own, doesn't seem to be strong enough to fight against the plan of the Meraglim. Moshe had to fight for him. Moshe had to change his name to give him that extra strength. Not only that, I continue along here, source number 3. When the Meraglim all come back and the 10 of them are saying bad things, the spies are saying bad things, source 3, who speaks up? It's not Yehoshua. Vayahas Kalev ata'am. It's Kalev who quiets the people. If you look at the Psukim, first Kalev speaks up, then Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces. Only then does Yehoshua and Kalev try to speak a second time, but it's not successful, and the people end up almost stoning them. So Yehoshua really doesn't even get the opportunity to stand up and speak up during that story at all. It's really Kalev. And within that story here in source number 5, we see it's Kalev who's complimented by God. God gets up and says, Abdi Kalev Ekev HaTaruach HaCheretimav. Wow, amazing what Kalev did within this story. Kalev is the one who therefore gets rewarded by getting a special portion of land in Eretz Yisrael, not Yehoshua. Not only that, in source number 6, as I continue in the Psukim, I notice that the listing of the names of Kalev and Yehoshua is in an interesting order. If I look at Bamidbar Chavav, Moshe's name comes before Aaron, not because Moshe's older, but because Moshe's more significant than Aaron. So too, in the same parak, and later on as well, Kalev's name is mentioned before Yehoshua. So I really start to question, why are we picking Yehoshua if he doesn't seem to be the greatest person of that generation and certainly not the star of the Meraglim story? But I question it even more. And I question even more because of two other stories I know about Yehoshua here in source 7 and in source number 8. Because in these stories, we see something about Yehoshua, which is a little disturbing to me. We would like to believe, and I know it's kind of ironic, there's an election going on right now. So we'll try to, you know, think about what this means to all of you as I'm speaking, but we're going to stick to Yoshua here. But we would like to believe that our leaders make correct decisions, that our leaders, you know how to assess situations in an appropriate way. But we have two stories where Yoshua clearly doesn't. And that would seem to be a very big problem of choosing him as a leader. What two stories are those? Here in source number 7, in the story of Chet Ha'egel, Moshe and Yoshua are up on the mountain and something's going on below, which we know is Chet Ha'egel. And Yoshua turns to Moshe and says to him here in source number 7, Be'emra Moshe kol mechama b'machaneh. I think there's a war going on. And Moshe says, no, you're totally wrong. You assess the situation completely wrong. In source number 8, another story where Moshe is collecting Shivim Zakenim, 70 people to help him. And Eldad and Medad, two of them get Nevuah in the Machaneh. And again, Yehoshua assesses the situation incorrectly. He screams out, Vayomer Adoni Moshe Kalaim, I object. There's something wrong going on here. And Moshe again has to correct him. No, you are incorrect about this situation. So here we have someone who doesn't seem to be the greatest in his generation, someone who does not seem to assess situations correctly when there's a crisis. And not only that, he seems to be really, really nervous and really, really scared to be a leader. You know, when you're looking for a leader, especially a leader to take over after the death of Moshe, you want someone who's strong. You want someone who's fearless. You want someone who can fill his shoes. But what we know about Yehoshua is that he is terrified. How do I know that? Because if you look at source number 9, I gave you many, many psukim, and actually it happened 7 times, where he's told, chazak v'yamatz, be strong. Now, you only say chazak v'yamatz, be strong, if you're not feeling strong, right? If your kid feels very confident, you have to say, study hard, you're going to be okay. You don't have to. When somebody's nervous, that's when you have to give them confidence. But if you look in my psukim here, 3 times in Devarim, so that means 3 times, Moshe says to Yehoshua, Oto chazek, chazak v'yematz, chazak v'yematz. 3 times in Sefer Yehoshua, Hashem says it to Yehoshua, chazak v'yematz, rak chazak v'yematz, again, chazak v'yematz. And then 1 more time, the Jewish people turn to Yehoshua and say, rak chazak v'yematz. That is many, many times, 7 times to be told, be strong, clearly showing us that he was not feeling very strong about his leadership. And we know that when you have a leader that's really shaky and doesn't feel strong in his leadership, it doesn't go well. I gave you a similar story in source number 10, which is, of course, the story of Shaul, the first king. And when he's told he's going to be king, he was kind of nervous about it. So when they draw his name out of the lottery, Vayivakshuhu, Velonimsa, they can't find him. He's missing. And they search for him. And where is he? He nehi nechbal hakelim, he's hiding in the closet because he's terrified. And what's the result of the people finding out that he's so scared that he doesn't really know that he should be the leader? There are people who are nasty and say terrible things about him and don't accept his leadership. So here we have someone who seems to have a quality that would be very, very negative about being a leader. And therefore, I ask you again, why Yehoshua? But you might say to me, wait a second, you got to give me other choices, right? Meaning you can't just say, why Yehoshua? Maybe that was the best they had in that generation. Maybe that's why Yehoshua was chosen. So who else could it be? Well, I know it can't be the oldest son of Aaron, because the oldest son of Aaron is chosen to be the Kohen Gadol. I know that it really can't be the children of Moshe here in source number 11. When the Pasuk tells us, Ela Toldo Aaron v'Moshe, these are the generations, these are the children of Aaron and Moshe. It only lists the children of Aaron. Moshe's children are missing, which would seem to imply that they're not significant enough, they're not deserving enough to be mentioned in the Pesukim, and therefore certainly they are not worthy for leadership. But who could it have been? Well, I think you're probably all thinking, what do you mean? You kind of said it in the beginning of the shiur. What about Kalev, right? Kalev, who seemed to be the one who was much stronger in the story of the spies, the one who stands up to the people. He's the one who quiets the people. He's the one that's stronger, the one that God praises. But not only that, in later stories, Kalev seems to really prove himself as a very great leader. When we get into Eretz Yisrael, it's not just that Kalev says, we can fight, we can win. He actually fights the giants. Here in source number 12, Vayera Misham Kalev et Shlosha b'nei Hanak. Kalev goes and he actually fights the giants once we get into Eretz Yisrael. But it's not just that he fights the giants. He actually also becomes the leader of the tribe of Yehuda. And the tribe of Yehuda in Sefer Yehoshua, in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, is the only tribe that wipes out all of the Canaanim from their land. He proves to be an excellent leader. So why not Kalev? Or I'll give you another possibility. What about Pinchas? Pinchas is someone who certainly shows leadership qualities. I gave you 3 different stories that we know about Pinchas. Number 1 here in source 13 in Bamidbar, we have the famous story of Pinchas when Kazbi and Zimri are publicly sinning in front of the Jewish people, and Pinchas sees what's going on, and he goes and he takes a spear, Vayikor et Shneihem, and he pierces it through both of them, and he kills them both. He stops the Magefa. It's amazing. And God praises him. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron Hakohen Heshivat Chamati Ma'al ben Yisrael Bekanoes Kenetiv B'Tolcham. Wow, what an amazing guy! What Pinchas does to kind of defend the honor of God—that's pretty amazing. What Pinchas does. But Pinchas seems to prove himself again and again in the later generation too. During the time of Yoshua, here in Source 14, is another story of Pinchas. You see, during the time of Yoshua, Reuven Gad, after an Hatzishevet Menashe, right, who wanted to live on the other side of the Yarden, so they have to come and fight first. But once they finish fighting, they say, it's time for us to go back to our land. And Yoshua sends them to the other side, and they build a Mizbeach. And when they build this Mizbeach, the Jewish people think that they're pulling away. They think, oh no, we have a problem. They're kind of pulling away from the Jewish people. And all the Jewish people gather together to fight a civil war against Reuven Gad and Hatzishevet Menashe. It's really scary. Along comes Pinchas. And Pinchas goes to the other side of the Yarden, talks to Reuven Gad and Hatzishevet Menashe. Vayishma Pinchas, he hears their perspective. They say, we're not pulling away. We're just building a Mizbeach to remind ourselves we're part of Am Yisrael. Pinchas then in Pasuk Lamed Aleph declares, he says to them, I see you are doing the right thing. You're not doing anything wrong. He returns back to the Jewish people, tells them, let's not fight. Let's not kill them out. Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vayitav HaDvar B'nei B'nei Yisrael, V'yabarchu Elokim B'nei Yisrael. Everybody's happy now. Everybody believes Pinchas. And they say, of course, we are not going to go up to fight them. We're not going to destroy Reuven Gad and Hatzishevet Menashe. He saves the day. He stops a rebellion. And not only that, in Source 15, he gets involved in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim as well. In Sefer Shoftim, we're about to fight a civil war against the tribe of Binyamin. And here in this situation, he actually tells us to go fight. And that's, of course, when we do succeed in fighting. But we have two different stories where the Jewish people turn to Pinchas for his leadership. So that's where I really ask my question, where I seem to have other options. So I need to understand, why did God say that the correct choice of replacing Moshe Rabbeinu was Yehoshua? And I'd like to answer this in three different ways. I think the reason why Yehoshua is chosen is for three reasons, all three. One is something that I would like to call consistency. Number two is commitment. And third is growth. And I'd like to go through all three with you and what I mean by them. Let's start with consistency. You know, when you have a leader that you really, really like, you want the next leader to be as similar as possible to that person and therefore give you the confidence that they're going to be consistent with what that leader was doing. That leader was doing stuff that you liked, and therefore you want to make sure that the next person is going to continue in his footsteps. Well, who's better to pick than Source 16, the guy who was called four different times in the Psukim, Misharet Moshe, Misharso, Misharso, Misharet Moshe, Misharet Moshe. What does Misharet mean? So I looked up in the dictionary and it said it's a servant, a bellboy, a lackey. I didn't like that. I looked it up in the Mefarshim and they translate it as Mitalmudav Mineurav, one of Moshe's students, one of Moshe's boys. And then you have to ask the question, which is, was this a unique role given to Yoshua? Was he the sole Misharet Moshe? Or Moshe, like any other major leader, like a king, would have many Mishartzim, would have many different servants, many different people who serve them, Yoshua being one of many. This question is asked by Ibn Ezra here in Source 17, based on the third pasuk, using the words Yehoshua ben Nun Misharet Moshe Mibchurav. He wants to know, what does it mean, Mibchurav? Comes Ibn Ezra with two different possibilities. Either, he says, Shesharato to miyom shehu bachor, it means he served him from when he was young. He served him from when he was a boy, which would therefore make it sound like this is a unique situation. Moshe picked him out when he was this little kid and made him into somebody special, you know, amongst his group of advisors, somebody who he always had with him. Ibn Ezra doesn't like this one. He gives a second explanation. Hu mehamuv charim l'sharet Moshe. No. It means he's one of the chosen. One of the chosen men who were chosen to serve Moshe. Ki acherim yeshimo. Because there were others. It wasn't just Yehoshua. It's not unique to Yehoshua. And I was looking throughout Tanakh to see, can I find other examples of Mishartzim, people who are Misharet another person? Is it unique or is it a not unique situation? And you find both. If you look at Source 18, a situation which is certainly unique, which is Avishag HaShunamit, Avishag who was chosen to keep David warm when he was old and could not be warm. And it tells about her, Vatishartsehu, and she was Misharat et HaMelech, which is obviously the feminine form. And that was clearly unique. She was the only one that was chosen to warm him in that way. Or another, Source 19, Elisha. Elisha Hanavi was chosen to be the Misharet Vayishartzehu of Eliyahu. He followed Eliyahu around for a number of years and then replaced him as the next head Navi. But I also found that there were Mishartzim in Tanakh that were not unique. For example, Source 20, Yosef, both in the house of Potiphar, it says Vayisharet Oto, and also in jail to the Sarat HaBachim, Vayisharet Otam. He was certainly not unique. Potiphar had many servants. In jail, there were many servants. Not only that, Shmuel himself, who it says about him, Mishareta Tashem, when early on, when he was a young boy, he was a Mishareta Eli in the Mishkan. And we know Eli's two sons, Chafni and Pinchas, also were there. So therefore, clearly they were not unique. We have two different ways to look at Yehoshua. Now, Abarbanel likes the first perspective. And he says, no. Yehoshua was very, very unique. And in this beautiful Mefarish that Abarbanel brings down here in Source 22, gives us a different perspective. And he says, how do I know that Yehoshua was unique? Because he's the only one recorded in the text that Moshe changes his name. And says Abarbanel, don't think that Moshe changed his name right before he was a spy because he needed extra help. That's not what it was about. But rather it was because he changed his name when he was a little kid, when he chose him out of the crowd and said, you're different. And therefore I'm going to add God to your name because I'm giving you this elevated new position of being my Misharet. If you look at Abarbanel where I bolded, but you can read the whole thing, Mipnei Shekir Bo Shea Yerei Shemayim, there was something about Yeshua. He was like, he's the chosen guy. And therefore, lo shenikra kenata, elo mipnei shemeit shebalash arzo haya korea takein. He didn't call him that now by the spy story. He called him that much earlier. It's just that this is the place that the Torah is telling us that Moshe changed his name. It was a completely unique situation where Yeshua was the only one chosen for this job. However, on the other hand, I can argue, no, it wasn't unique. It was more like Yosef. It was more like Shmuel. But if I think about Yosef and Shmuel, both of them started out as not being unique, but ended up creating for themselves a very unique situation. Shmuel went from being one of the people serving in the Mishkan to the leader and the shofet of the next generation. Yosef was not unique, and then at the end became the head of Potiphar's household. So you can start as one among many, but then you get a promotion, and you get a promotion that makes you extremely unique. And therefore, even if I want to argue that Yehoshua wasn't unique from the start, he certainly got a promotion, which made him tremendously unique. What's his promotion? A number of them. Source 23, the first time Yehoshua is given a promotion is in the war against Amalek, first time we hear about him, where Moshe, as we all know, goes on the rock and holds up his arms with Aaron and Hur underneath him. But who goes out to lead the army and fight? By Chalosh Yehoshua to Amalek. It's Yehoshua. He gets a promotion. He leads the army down below. Promotion number two in Source 24. Yehoshua is the only one who gets to accompany Moshe by Har Sinai. He doesn't get to go all the way up, but he gets to go further than everyone else, even Aaron, even the Zakenim. And not only that, Source 25, the ultimate promotion after Chet HaEgel, when everybody else has to stay far away from the Ohel Moed and nobody can go close, Yehoshua is the only one who's allowed nearby, allowed to be with Moshe in the Ohel, away from all the rest of the Jewish people. So here we see that whether he started out unique or not, he certainly sets himself as completely unique. He's there side by side with Moshe in all of these incredible, situations that Moshe goes through. He's watching Moshe as a leader in every single aspect of Moshe's leadership, like Elisha, who watches Eliyahu and every decision he makes to learn how to be the next person that fills the shoes of Eliyahu. And therefore, it's simple. There's consistency to the leadership. How do I know? Because Yehoshua's been there the whole time. He knows the mission. He knows the job. He's watched Moshe do it from a very early time. He's heard everything that Moshe has to say. He's the expert of what Moshe would do in every situation. And therefore, he provides for us the consistency to Moshe's leadership. But it's not just about consistency. It's also, number two, about commitment. Because if you look throughout all the stories of Yehoshua, there is a common thread about everything, about his personality, which is he's obedient to what he is told to do. Everything he's told to do, he does it exactly as he is told. And you see it from day one of the stories in Yehoshua. If you look here, Source 26, which again, back to the war against Amalek, the first story we hear about Yehoshua, what does it say? Vayas Yehoshua kasher amar lo Moshe l'ilchem Amalek. He does everything Moshe told him to do. And then as you follow throughout Sefer Yehoshua, you see these words repeat themselves over and over and over again. How do I cross over the Yarden? Source 27. Kol hadavar asher tziva Hashem es Yehoshua l'daber el ha'am k'chol asher tziva Moshe es Yehoshua. What does he do? He does what Hashem told him to do, which is what Moshe told Yehoshua to do. Source 28. How do I give over the Torah? How do I repeat the brachos and klalos? Well, I do everything kasher tziva Moshe eved Hashem, exactly what Moshe told me to do, over and over again. Kasher tziva Moshe eved Hashem, to the extent pasuk Lamed Hey. Lo haya davar mikol asher tziva Moshe asher lo kara Yoshua. When he reads over the Torah, it was not a word that Moshe commanded him that he didn't say. But this theme continues. And the next job that he has is to conquer the land. And the Psukim tell us, source 29, Etz asher tziva Hashem Elokecha as Moshe Abdo. Source 30, as he's conquering the land over and over. I'm just giving you a few examples to get you a taste. Kasher tziva Hashem Moshe Abed Hashem. Kasher tziva Hashem as Moshe. Kechol asher diber Hashem Moshe. You get the theme over and over and over again. Now, it's interesting because I think the Jewish people pick up on it to some extent, because what happens is when they want Yehoshua to do something, they know the trick words. They know, oh, tell Yehoshua, Moshe said to do it. And then, of course, he's going to do it. If you go to source 32 here, when Yehuda is reminding Yehoshua, remember Moshe promised that Kalev was supposed to get a special piece of land? What do they say? Don't you remember Asher Diber Hashem as Moshe? Don't you remember what Hashem said to Moshe? Oh, of course Yehoshua is going to do it. When Bnei Tzlafchad wants to get their piece of land that Moshe promised them, reminds Yehoshua, remember Hashem Sivas Moshe? Don't you remember? And when, of course, the Levim want their piece of land that they're supposed to get, don't you remember Hashem Siva Biyad Moshe? To the extent that I would say of the entire Sefer Yehoshua, if I had to pick one pasuk that just tells me everything I need to know about Yehoshua and about the entire book of Yehoshua, it's source 35. You look at source 35 with me. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe Abdo, kein tziva Moshe es Yehoshua. This is exactly how the story goes. Hashem commanded Moshe. Moshe then commanded Yehoshua before he died. And then what is Sefer Yehoshua? Kein asa Yehoshua. Lo isir davar mikol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Yehoshua does everything as he's told to do. He does not change one thing that God told Moshe to do, which again, Moshe told him to do. Consistency for sure in what Moshe tells him to do, obedience to what Moshe told him to do, that is entirely what we see in Sefer Yehoshua and is the personality of Yehoshua. But not only that, Yehoshua mimics Moshe. Even if Moshe doesn't tell him to do it, he does things exactly as Moshe had done it. He mimics Moshe as much as he can. If you look at my chart, we'll go through it very quickly. Both of them send spies. Both of them split a water. Both of them hold up their arms when they're fighting against a war to remind people of Hashem. They both use certain plagues. They both use the Aron as a symbol for the people to walk behind. They both have the same experience where they're told by God, remove your shoe. The place you're standing on is holy. They both fall on their face in prayer all the time. They both do a celebratory Brit Mila service before they celebrate Pesach. They both give over the Torah. They both do the brachos and the klalos. They both make a covenant between the people and God, and they both have very long goodbye speeches. I mean, Moshe beats out Yehoshua by quite a bit, but they both have very long speeches before they die, which are very similar in a lot of ways. There is so much consistency between these two in, you know, Yehoshua is just kind of a piece of Moshe Rabbeinu in this continual fashion, which therefore makes sense to me, source 36 and source 37. Why Moshe changes his name? They're so connected. So Moshe even gives him his name. And not only that, of course, Moshe is told to put his hands on Yehoshua and give him from his spirituality, give him from his ruach, whatever that means. Source 38, it's reviewed to us, by the way, in Zot HaBracha, which we're going to read, that this Yehoshua is about to be our next leader, Malei Ruach Chach. He's got the wisdom of Moshe in him because Moshe put his hands on him. It reminds us again of this Elisha Eliyahu, Elisha who also has the Ruach of Eliyahu in him, which is why he can continue his mission. So you might say to me, why? Why is that so important? Why is it so important that Yehoshua is so committed to doing everything that Moshe told him to do or everything that Moshe has done in the past? Why is that an important quality in a leader? Shouldn't innovation be a good quality? And I agree that there are many times innovation is great. But in this generation of Yehoshua taking over Moshe's job, I think it is very important to have a leader who will listen to everything that Moshe told him to do for two reasons. Number one, the people are very, very nervous when Moshe dies, and they don't know if they're going to trust in the next leader. And they tell Yehoshua that. They're actually pretty honest about it. Source 39, they say to Yehoshua, we will listen to you. We will do whatever you say. Kechol asher shemanu al Moshe kenish ma'alecha, we'll listen to you like we listen to Moshe. Rak yeh Hashem Elokecha imach asher yeh Moshe. But only if you prove that God's with you the way you were with Moshe. And so David says it's a condition. Rak yeh Hashem imach, aval
is Lotze. But if not, then not. We need to see you are like Moshe. So how do you show us that you're like Moshe? If we want him to be like Moshe, how does he show us that yes, he is? And God actually tells him the answer to that question. What is he supposed to do? In Source 40, in the very opening chapter, God says, you want me to be with you like I was with Moshe? You want to be that person that the Jewish people want you to be? Rachazak v'amatz ma'od, be strong. Lishmor la'asok k'chol ha'Torah asher tzivcha Moshe avdi. Listen to everything that Moshe told you to do. Do word for word the Torah and everything that Moshe told you to do, because that's the way you're going to prove to the people that you are deserving to step into the shoes of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's exactly what he does. He does everything Moshe said, but again, he acts like Moshe. And where we see it so clearly is here in Source 41. The first real big thing that Yeshua does is he splits the sea, which of course reminds them of Kriyas Yamsuf that Moshe does. And on that day, Hashem says, I'm doing this miracle for you on purpose. He kasher yitzeh Moshe emach. I'm going to show them. I'm doing the same miracle for you to prove to them I'm with you the way I was with Moshe. And right after he splits the sea, the pasuk tells us that's what it accomplished. Bayom hahu gidel Hashem es Yeshua b'nei kol Yisrael. They're like, oh, you are like Moshe. Okay, you're the next leader. You're the leader that we're supposed to be. So one reason why he had to be so committed to listening to everything that Moshe said that he's supposed to do and Moshe did in the past is because he needs to prove to the people that he's the next leader that's supposed to be. He's going to do everything that Moshe told him to do. But I think it's one step further, because if I ask most people, what is the goal of Sefer Yehoshua? They normally say, oh, it's conquering the land and dividing up the land. But there's one more piece of Sefer Yehoshua that is so significant, which is found here in Source 43, which is it's the giving over the Mesorah. Yehoshua was responsible to give over the Mesorah, to give over the Torah, the brachos and the klalos, to the next generation. And when it comes to giving over Mesorah, you can't be innovative. You have to give it over word for word. And that's exactly what is told to Yehoshua in Devarim Chaf Chet, right, by Moshe himself. When it comes to the Torah and what I'm telling you, you can't go to the right. You can't go to the left. You got to do exactly what I tell you to do. And that's why here I give it to you again, even though I read these psukim already. When it comes to Source 43, which is the story of Yeshua giving over the Mesorah, that's why he repeats it so many times. He does exactly what Moshe said. And again, there wasn't anything that Moshe said that Yeshua didn't read. Because when it comes to giving over the Mesorah, you need somebody who will do word for word, follow the instructions to the T. You needed that personality. And you see that so clearly in Yehoshua, in the sense that in Source 44, God says this to Yehoshua. Don't go to the right. Don't go to the left. You got to do exactly as you're told. And we see that Yehoshua gets this message because he himself at the very end says to the Jewish people, I'm about to die. This is my goodbye speech. And I'm giving you the same message over. Whatever's written in the Torah, same words. Don't go to the right. Don't go to the left. When it comes to the Torah, when it comes to the Mesorah, you got to do exactly as you're told. And therefore, commitment to Moshe and doing exactly what Moshe told him to do was so important for the next leader, and therefore Yehoshua was the correct personality for that job. So we see very clearly he has consistency with Moshe, he has commitment to Moshe, but I really, really think there's one more step here, which is why Yehoshua is chosen. Because if you go back to my original question, which was why pick Yehoshua? He didn't seem to be the greatest. He seemed to have made mistakes. Well, that's true, because we all make mistakes. But what we also see about Yehoshua is that he grew. He learned from his mistakes, and he changed as a person, and he changed as a leader. Let me explain. If you go back to the first mistake that I quoted, which I gave you here again in Source 46, which was the time of Chet Egel, the Jewish people are sinning. Moshe and Yehoshua are on the mountain. And Yehoshua hears, and Yehoshua says, I'm going to see what I think is going on. And he's wrong. He says to Moshe, I think there's a war going on. Now Moshe doesn't yell at him. Moshe doesn't scream at him and say, oh, you now can't be the next leader because you made a mistake. But rather, I'm going to teach you. So Moshe answers him and says, no. Listen again. Ein kol hanik vura ve'ein kol hanik chalusha. This is not someone winning. This is not someone losing. This is not a war. Kol hanut anochi shomea. This is rebellion. Something else is going on. Listen closer, because don't jump to conclusions. And I actually think that lesson is learned by Yehoshua in a story I already told you about. Because when Yehoshua becomes a leader and Reuven and Gad and Chatzishe and Manasseh on the other side of the Yarden builds a mizbeah and everybody's jumping to conclusions and they're gathering for war, who do you think sends Pinchas to go find out what's actually going on? Yeshua sends Pinchas. Yeshua says, hey, I learned this lesson already. Don't just assume something bad is going on. Don't jump to conclusions. I'm going to send somebody to go figure out what's going on. And of course, at the end, there is no revolt going on. And he ends up stopping a mass murder of 2.5 tribes. We see it also in the second story. If you look at source 47, let's revisit that story. 70 Zakenim are chosen. Eldad Umeda don't go to the Almohad, and they start prophesizing. And Yeshua gets upset, right? Vayomer Adoni Moshe Kla'im, I object, right? And why is he objecting? The Mefarshim want to know. The Ramban says maybe he thought Sheker B'fiyem, they were Navi Sheker, they were saying false things. Rashi says they were actually saying things like Moshe's going to die and Yeshua's going to take over. So that's not false, right? But he didn't like, they were insulting the honor of Moshe. And comes Moshe and says to him, wait, a lesson to be learned. Hamikanatali, you jealous for me? No. Umiyitain kol am nevi'im ki yitain Hashem's ruch aleihem. I wish everybody could have a relationship with God. I wish God would speak to everyone. Don't get nervous about other people taking forms of leadership. Don't allow them to make you feel threatened. And I think Yeshua learns this lesson as well, because while he's the leader, we saw this, I told you all these stories, he allows Kalev to use his leadership qualities for the good in conquering all the land of Yehuda. He uses Pinchas and his leadership qualities to go be the leader and help out in the time of Reuven and Gad. We see that he's not threatened by other people, by other strong characters, which is the lesson that Moshe teaches him. We see Yehoshua grow. We see it in the language of the Torah as well. If you look at source 48, if you look at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, Yehoshua is called the Masharet Moshe, a title we've discussed, and Moshe is called Eved Hashem. I gave you here on the source sheet how many times Moshe is called Eved Hashem. It's obviously a major compliment to be called Eved Hashem. Well, guess what? By the end of Sefer Yehoshua and the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, Yehoshua is no longer the Masharet Moshe. He has grown. He's a new person. He is now Yehoshua ben Nun, Eved Hashem. He deserves the title of Eved Hashem given to him twice because he has grown as a person. He has grown as a leader. He's no longer just the Misharet of Moshe. But not only that, I said to you, remember, he's so nervous in the beginning and he needs to be told Chazak V'Emas, Chazak V'Emas. Well, he grows in that too. Source number 50, this is the middle of his leadership. He turns to the Jewish people and uses the language right back at them. And he says, don't be scared. Al tiru v'al tachtu, chizku v'imsu. He says it back to them. Don't be scared. Be strong. You can conquer the land. Everything will be okay. We see a direct flip in the personality of Yehoshua. And therefore, if I take a step back, I see three answers why Yehoshua is chosen. He's consistent. He's the most similar to Moshe. He's going to be able to continue the job that Moshe has begun. He's committed to Moshe. He's the most similar to him, deserving the respect of the people, and also, therefore, having the ability to give over the Masorah. And of course, he grows as a person. I think it's interesting, two major stories we hear about Yehoshua in the Torah is when he leads again to fight against Amalek, and also how he goes with Moshe on Har Sinai. And I think those two are to prepare him for the two jobs he gets in Yehoshua, to fight the wars against Canaan. So he helps out Moshe fighting against Amalek to learn how to fight these wars. And he's the one who gives over the Masorah. So he's next to Moshe or right near Moshe when he receives the Torah, because he's the next in line to give over the Torah. It's quite fitting that the person who is not at Chet HaEgel and the person who's the good spy in Meraglim, our two biggest sins, are the person that's chosen to lead the next generation. But I'm not done yet. I do have a few more minutes to go because I have to now go back to my question, which is, well, what about my other two choices? What about my other two options? What about Kalev and what about Pinchas? What is wrong with them being chosen for leadership? And I think that if you look at both Pinchas and Kalev, what they have in common is what is the opposite of Yehoshua. They're innovators. They do things on their own. In both of the stories, you actually have to question what they've done. Here, the Meraglim come back, 10 of them, and they're saying negative things about the land. And Kalev steps up. Vayahas Kalev etam. Now, who's standing right there? Moshe and Aaron. You might question, like Yehoshua, who's saying, hey, who am I to speak up in front of Moshe and Aaron? Yehoshua waits till Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces, and then he tries to speak. But maybe one could argue that Kalev was incorrect to stand up and say, hey, I'm going to speak up even though the leaders are there. So too, the Gemara questions the actions of Pinchas. Pinchas is standing there. Cusbi and Simri are sitting in front of Moshe and Aaron. Moshe's not doing anything. Moshe's not killing them. There's no Beis Din that says they deserve to die. And here comes Pinchas and throws a spear through both of them. It actually makes sense in both of their stories here. I remind you again in source 51 that God speaks up. Because maybe God's not saying, wow, they're so amazing. But God's saying, wait, you might have thought they're doing something wrong. So I'm speaking up to say, no, they're doing something okay. Yeah, maybe he should have been quiet and let Moshe and Aaron speak first. But don't worry, he's got this other spirit. Like he's got this innovative spirit in him. And it's okay, he was doing it for the right reasons. And maybe again, Pinchas, we might have thought he's doing something bad. He's murdering two people. Who said he should murder two people? He didn't ask Moshe's permission before doing it. So comes God and says, no, he was doing it for the right reasons. Bekanoas kenoti betolcham. He was really, he was zealous on my behalf. He was doing it for the right reasons. But we see their personalities. They jump. They innovate. They don't wait to see what would Moshe say? What would Aaron say? Clearly, we don't see them in the same way as Yehoshua, as having this commitment to what Moshe would tell them to do, what Moshe would do in that situation. They do their own thing. They do it their own way. But not only that, when it comes to Yehoshua, not only did we say he had the commitment to Moshe, he also had the consistency. The day in and the day out, being there all the time, being with Moshe, learning from Moshe's ways. When we get to Kalev and we get to Pinchas, they kind of pop in and they pop out. They pop in and they pop out. They have their big moments and then they're gone. And they remind me to some extent of one of my favorite stories in Tanakh, source 52, which is Eliyahu HaNavi, who screams at God, Kano Kaneti Lashem. Obviously, same words like Pinchas, similar personalities. I'm zealous for you, God. The people are so terrible. You should just kill me because I can't handle the people. And God does this incredible mashal. Well, he says, go outside. And of course, he passes in front of him a wind. And he says, God's on the wind. And then there's an earthquake. God's on the earthquake. God's on the fire. Where is God? In the cold mama daka. He's in this low, constant voice. And the message that I believe God is trying to tell Eliyahu is that consistency, being there day in and day out, you want to be a leader, then you can't just have the big moments. You got to be there every day. You got to be there at every moment in time for the good stuff and for the bad stuff. You can't kind of pop in and you can't pop out. Yehoshua has that consistency in the leadership. But my favorite part about Yehoshua is the growth, because it's very rare in Tanakh that you get to see someone when they're young and when they're old. We normally see somebody at a stage in their life, or we join them when they're much older in their life. But when it comes to Yehoshua, we literally watch him from a younger stage to an older stage. We're introduced to him. We feel like he's this young boy who's following Moshe around. We watch him grow in his leadership. We watch him make mistakes. We watch him learn from those mistakes. We get excited for him when he's chosen to be the leader. We're nervous for him when everyone's saying Chazak V'Amata, and we're feeling his angst. We're feeling his, fear, and we understand his fear. Who could take over for Moshe Rabbeinu? But then we watch him as we go through Sefer Yehoshua, and he just checks off all the boxes. Moshe said, do this, does it. Next, does it all. He does everything Moshe tells him to. Enter the land, give over the Masorah, conquer the land, divide it up to the extent, source 53, we are cheering him as we read these words, Vayavod Yisrael et Hashem kol yimei Yehoshua. He was successful. The Jewish people are wonderful and serve Hashem throughout the time of Yehoshua. We wish we had this pasuk going on in a lot more of our leaders, right? Where we're just good and we serve Hashem the entire time. Yehoshua, I believe, inspires us to grow because we watch him grow. So he inspires us to grow. Yehoshua teaches us that you are not expected to be perfect on day one or even on day two. He teaches us that life is about learning and it's about growing. Who he was in the beginning is not who he was at the end. So yeah, it's true. Maybe he was number five in the beginning. He wasn't the greatest. And maybe he made mistakes in the beginning, but that's okay. And maybe he even needed a name change for strength. Maybe that's true. But then he grew. And by the end, he was Yehoshua Eved Hashem, who got the Jewish people to serve Hashem his entire life. And therefore, I find Yehoshua, even though I'm sad when I read about the death of Moshe, I'm excited about Yehoshua. I'm inspired by Yehoshua because I think from him, we really learn about the ability to grow. For someone who's so scared, to put his fear aside, step up and step into the role of his beloved leader and do such an incredible job. And I think during this time, it's a really powerful lesson because we are all faced with so many challenges and so many difficulties right now. And I think the most comforting thought for me is the thought of growth. It's the thought of today is not going to be the same as tomorrow. And I can learn from today to improve my tomorrow and figure out the best way to move forward. I can make
tomorrow a better day than today. And I think that's true about our lives right now, but I think it's also true about ourselves. You know, we're focusing a lot on ourselves and how are we going to make ourselves better people? And what are we supposed to be learning from all this that's going on, you know, in COVID and we're isolated. And what are we supposed to learn from the fact we can't dance with the Torah? I don't know what you're doing there in Chicago. You know, what are we supposed to do with these facts? And I think what we're supposed to do is look to ourselves and look to what is it that we could do to grow as people? Can we commit ourselves more to our families, to our communities, to our shul, to chesed, to learning, whatever it is, how can we grow? And therefore, I think on this Simchas Torah, when we read about the death of Moshe, maybe we focus more on the choosing of Yehoshua and how he teaches us that we have the ability to grow from our experiences, that we also, just like him, can succeed in our mission and possibles, and we can be inspired from the choosing of Yehoshua to be the next leader of Am Yisrael. I wish you all a Chag Sameach. And thank you so much for joining us tonight to learn some Torah. And I hope you all join in continuation to learn with Talia Molosky, my student, one of my very, very good friends. And I'm excited to join that right now. So I think we're all supposed to get off, I believe. I'm going to stop share. And that everyone should have a wonderful, wonderful evening. Thank you all for coming. I think we're right, supposed to get off. Talia, you there? I'm going to say goodbye. Everybody get off. Go to Talia. Have a great night.